Welcome back to another edition of the Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's me, Len Testa, and this is our show for the week of Shmurzday, March 25th, 2024. On the show today, news, listener questions, and a discussion about the nature of time itself. Then in our main segment, Jim continues the story of the last huge Magic Kingdom transformation project when Disney proposed Pixie Hollow for Fantasyland, and we ended up with Storybook Circus. Let's get started by bringing in the man who wants to know where the Three Musketeers are always shown with swords. It's Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
Well, I'm a child of the 60s, Len. So it's like, for me, Three Musketeers is a candy bar. By the way, introduced in 1932, originally was chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry flavored. Sadly, that was phased out in World War II due to supply issues. Now, interesting thing, Len. The Three Musketeers bar, which is a chocolate-covered bar with nougat, there's only a minor difference between the Three Musketeers bar and the Milky Way. The Milky Way has a caramel coating. So technically, if you're at home and only have Three Musketeers bars and you really want a Milky Way, you just break out the caramel. That said, I have tried this and it took us about 3 hours then to get the cat off the couch because she was stuck. But beyond that, are very tasty.
It's the things they don't teach you in food science school. Step one, secure the cat. What? Okay. I just imagine the cat sort of walking around, sticking to everything as it goes. And then the cat looking at you like, all right, what now, genius?
Yeah. It's kind of an everyday occurrence here at Statler Hill.
Oh, God, that's beautiful. All right, here we go. Jim, let's do a quick shout out to everyone who subscribes to our show over at patreon.com/Jim Hill Media, including Jeff Solomon, Danny Lee, John Simon, Bill DeShiner, Michael Sepcott, and Peter Serretta. Jim, this is the Disney culinary team about to debut a new beverage with the potential for butterbeer levels of sales and specifically designed for lands and ships with Disney's villains. It's a blend of blueberry juice, lemon, and mint, with or without a splash of rum. They call it the poison for Cusco, the poison chosen especially to kill Cusco. Cusco's poison. And it'll retail for $15.99. True story. Why do we not have this drink, Jim?
No, this is, as a lover of the Emperor's New Groove and especially, Kronk, I would buy this today, especially, given the choice between blue milk and green milk, which I am convinced is actually poison. But this Cusco, poison for Cusco, I would get in line for now.
And it's going to tie into a thing we're going to talk about in the news, which is coming up now.
Okay.
Folks, the news is sponsored by touringplans.com. Touring Plans helps you save time and money at theme parks like Walt Disney World. Check us out at touringplans.com. All right, Jim, every show should begin with a round of self-congratulations. Last Friday, the Orlando Sentinel asked us to predict the kinds of things Disney World might build. And we said, don't be surprised to see Indiana Jones at the Animal Kingdom, plus a couple of Encanto-themed rides. The next business day, Jim, Monday, Disney files a construction permit for construction trailers and parking over in the Asia section of Animal Kingdom with a road to Dinoland. So let's talk about this. I'm a little bit surprised that Animal Kingdom goes first, because you and I have talked about Magic Kingdom and Hollywood Studios, but this one was sort of like third on our list.
Yeah, but I think that the hard reality is that this is a park that, how long has it been now since Pandora, the World of Avatar opened?
2017, 2018, yeah.
This is a park that definitely needs to create an intent to visit. And face it, Encanto has proven to be wildly popular, and more to the point, Dinosaur, never really, put gas in the tank the way that they had hoped. So it's like, look, the 1-2 punch of putting these two IPs in that corner of the park. And let's remember that this is a section of the park that you can operate after all the animals have gone back to their barn.
So construction is not going to impact animals as much over in Dinoland.
No. So, just going to be interesting to see how quickly Disney can turn this around, because as you and I were mentioning on last week's show, to be honest, I think we're both a little stunned that the Splash Mountain to Tiana's Bayou Adventure thing has happened as fast as it has. So it'll be interesting to see once they actually turn the key on this change, how soon Dino Land becomes the home of these two new IPs.
And I think part of the fire that's being lit under Disney is because they obviously see the same sorts of things that we see about hotel room night bookings for later 2024 being lower than they were in 2023, which were lower than in 2022, which were lower than in 2021. So they need something. So especially the way that, especially the amount of lead time that Disney needs to make major construction projects. I mean, so what are we looking at here? If they start construction in 2024, what year do you think these things might open?
Realistically, I would say 2026, maybe late summer, early fall.
You think they can get three rides open in 2 years?
If we're talking about Indy, it is a Splash Mountain situation. You're leaving your physical plant in the same place. You're using the same ride system. You're just tearing out sets and that sort of thing. So I would actually not be surprised to see Indy open first. And remember, you can actually open that part of Animal Kingdom up in the Oasis area.
Yeah, because the walkway to the right to Dinoland can stay open, while the walkway to the left, which is sort of the Dinorama area of Animal Kingdom, would be closed. Okay, that's fair. All right.
Yeah, I mean, you could have that up and running while you continue to work on Encanto, which, based on the concept art, is a much more involved project, with a much more ambitious reimagining of that side of the park. Though Mr. Shull and I just the other day were looking at that concept art, and you can see that the building that Chester and Hester is in, and likewise Restaurantosaurus, are still part of this plan. I mean, hell, the queue for Indiana Jones will be the exact same queue for Countdown to Extinction, the Dinosaur the Ride.
I think you're right in that the physical plant for Dinosaur is going to stay the same. I don't have the same faith that anything around Chester and Hester's will continue to exist once that part of the land is done. So let's talk about what's going in there. So for Dinosaur, it's a retheme to Indiana Jones. But you and Mr. Shull and I had a conversation about the specific Indiana Jones that it's going to be. And this is, it's Indiana Jones Raiders of the Lost Ark Indy.
Yeah. And what's kind of interesting is that, in fact, there's been a lot of speculation online as, you know, to the effect of, okay, so will we see, for example, some of the elements from the Tokyo Disney Seas version show up? But yeah, the thinking seems to be same ride vehicle, same physical layout of attraction, but at the same time, taking elements that have worked in the two previous versions of the ride, but really also leaning into Raiders, to, you know, to the version of the character that people love, not the geriatric trick that showed up for the Dial of Destiny, okay?
So I love how when this was being explained to me, mm-hmm. people were using Galaxy's Edge and Batuu as the counter example. Essentially, management went to Imagineering and said, and for the timeline for this Indiana Jones ride, we're thinking the Raiders of the Lost Ark. And do you know why? Because do you see what you did over here in Batuu? Yeah, not that. That's not what we want. We want the opposite of that. So they get the classic characters. Okay. But I will note here, Jim, two interesting facts, which sort of Venn diagram overlap. One is that parts of Raiders of the Lost Ark, at least the beginning, happens in South America.
They do.
Also, Encanto is based in Colombia, which I am not a great geologist, but I believe also exists in South America.
Yep. This worked, because remember, this is still a park that celebrates animals. So it'll be interesting to see what animal encounters they will manage to sort of fold in here.
And through a thing that I can't talk about how I know, my sense is that we should see some exploration in this revamped land of the flora, fauna, and culture of South America. So just as we have Asia and Africa, it would not surprise me to see South America as a land here.
That is no surprise given the modern Disney company. Just one final up before we close up on this, though. When I say that, you know, they're reusing chunks of Chester and Hester, I mean like the Dino-Rama gift shop bathroom complex.
Oh, yeah, bathrooms might stay. Yeah, no one who's ever done a remodel wants to touch bathrooms.
I was about to say,
don't move plumbing.
Yeah, no, that you've done enough of these that you know that drill. But as for where Chester and Hester's Dino-Rama, all of the attractions were, yeah, that you know, get the backhoe. Okay.
Did I once remodel a three-story building based on the location of a specific bidet? Maybe. I'm just saying.
Okay.
The one thing I will note, Jim, is this, is let's say we get an Encanto ride over at the Chester and Hester's area of Dinoland. And we're all assuming that the Triceratops spinner ride is going to stay and be rethemed to Encanto. So that's going to stay. The building of a new Encanto ride will basically bring us back to roughly the land ride capacity that we had with Primeval World. So Disney's going to market this as, yeah, you're getting a new ride. I would say we're getting a replacement of the ride that closed a couple of years ago, and we're back to square one. But that's fine. I'll take what I can get at this point.
Okay. Just a quick question, though, that Indiana Jones, its hourly capacity is what, 2,100 people an hour?
It breaks down a lot. I don't know that they run it that much. I'd have to go back and look.
Okay, because, I mean, what was it, 12 people per vehicle, that sort of thing. I'm wondering if that's also a secondary agenda when it comes to the changeover from Dinosaur to Indy, to the effect of, okay, let's make this a little bit more reliable.
I mean, maybe. So Dinosaur, when we've counted, Dinosaur averages between 1,600 and 1,700 people an hour when we've counted. It's been as low as like 1,200, depending on how they're running things, but 1,600 an hour. So things like Primeval World would probably be, I mean, maybe 1,000 an hour, which would, you know, if they only need to make up 1,000 rides an hour, 1,000 guests an hour on a ride, you could do a lot with that. That could be a relatively straightforward water-based ride. That can be this is going to be a D, C or D ticket, right? It's not going to be an E ticket ride, this Encanto thing that we're getting, right? I mean,
the one thing that intrigues me about this whole thing. Remember, we previously had, prior to this Encanto Indy, you know, we had a Josh D'Amaro standing on stage and, well, let's imagine. And then that was when we had the Moana-themed concept art with Zootopia over where Dinosaur was supposed to be. And that art suggested that Triceratops Spin was going to stay and be rethemed to a Kakamura attraction. And yes, that version also seemed to show a Moana water-themed ride. But the problem of the Encanto stuff is it just basically shows the hillside and the village that's below the Madrigal home. So it's hard looking at that, figuring out, well, what ride system? I don't see.
I can't say anymore right now.
Okay. All right. We're going to leave it there, folks. Going to leave it there.
Fair enough. All right. The other interesting piece of news, or a couple more, actually. Disney Cruise Line announced its next ship, the Disney Destiny, which is an interesting name for one thing, because it's slightly different than the Magic, Wonder, Dream, Fantasy, Treasure, Adventure. Destiny is sort of like a fate type thing. But the more interesting thing to me, Jim, here is the theme, is that it's themed to villains and heroes. And I don't think you and I have talked about this, but I don't know if I've ever said it on the show. For years. I've always wanted to do an April Fool's joke video where Disney is announcing the next cruise ship and it's villains themed. And this is as far as I've gotten the idea, but the one idea I had was this family of four sitting at a table on a DCL ship at dinner, and then Hook walks by and knocks over all their drinks with his hook. And the family just laughs like, oh, that's so funny. He's a villain. Get it? Like, why is this not the commercial? So I have wanted this for probably 10 years. I can't tell you how many times I've annoyed Scott Sanders at Disney Cruise Line blog with this idea, like, we should do a ship just based on villains.
I won't lie to you, Len. When I heard it had been called the Disney Destiny, I think Bob Iger's projecting again. You know, just sort of, it's been kind of a tough year. You know, the Disney Destiny.
If it was projection, it would be the Disney CEO for life.
Well, there we go. Right. But yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love this idea. And in fact, what's kind of interesting is, speaking of Disney heroes and villains, we'll touch on that a little bit in today's feature. But But yeah, I'm going to be fascinated to see as they start to walk the art out for, you know, what they're doing for restaurants and entertainment experiences and that sort of thing. You're going to really want to see what our destiny holds, Len.
We're going to title that show as Fate Would Have It.
There we go.
No, that should be the name of our cruise when we go on it. When we do our group event, the group event when we go on the Disney Destiny has to be called As Fate Would Have It.
All right. I love that. All right. Let's do it. Okay.
All right. The other bit of news this week. CommuniCore Plaza will reopen on June 10th, 2024. As you recall, Disney said Epcot construction would finish, Jim, in 2023. But what we didn't realize, Jim, is that Epcot's management team is now using the Xandarian calendar ever since Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind opened in 2022. And a Xandarian year must consist of more than 12 Earth months for all of this to make sense. So that's my reasoning, and I'm going with it here.
Okay.
Also, did you notice here that Disney mentioned that they're running an Encanto-themed show called Celebración Encanto from June 10th to September 6th in front of the plaza? Okay. Jim, how do you say trial balloon in Spanish?
Okay. Hello? That's... Boy, you know, the
en español, ¿cómo se dice trial balloon en español?
Okay.
Yeah, the concept art looks really interesting, though. It looks like a hoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, it has a strong enough score that, you know, you could definitely get a show of sorts out of this. But, yeah, so June 10th through the 6th. Interesting.
We'll be there when it opens. All right, last little bit of news. Disney's filed a construction permit for Storybook Circus in the Magic Kingdom. So word on the street, Jim, is that this is for the Smellophants on Parade scavenger hunt in Storybook Circus. What? I don't think we've talked about this.
Hasn't that been in place for a while though?
An expansion of it? I was there like 2 weeks ago and I don't remember seeing it. So maybe these show scenes that are covered under the construction permit are to make it more visible to guests. Cause I've walked through there and I don't remember seeing it.
And more to the point, what was it? It was popcorn scented. It was, it was cotton candy scented. How many circus related scents are there, Len? You know, I mean, I don't necessarily want to be how the guy smells who cleans up after the elephant.
I was going to say, eau de clown shoes is not really high on my list, but we are on fire today, Jim. Thank God we're recording this.
There we go. All right.
All right. On to listener questions. Kylie writes in with a compliment and a question, and she says this. First things first, Len, your enunciation is impeccable. Oh, thank you. As my mom used to say, girls don't get intimate with boys who are illiterate. Anyway, in my earlier life, Kylie says, I was an opera singer by training, and one of the cardinal rules was to phonate both the terminal and beginning consonants of adjoining words, even if they were the same or similar. Take, for example, I won't take it. Most people when speaking will combine the terminal T of won't with a T at the beginning of take to one enunciated T, like I won't take it. You, however, are consistent with pronouncing both T's in said example. I just love listening to you talk. Oh, thank you. That's one person anyway. On to the question. On average, how much have Walt Disney World Resort prices increased in the past 5 years? We took friends to stay at club level in the Animal Kingdom Lodge in early 2019, and to my recollection, we paid around $500 a night. That was a reduced rate because it was an annual pass holder. We're looking to perhaps do the same in the coming year, and I was nearly apoplectic when I saw the price for the same room at $1,070 a night. Yes. Have all rooms gone up this much? And if so, what's the justification of this 100% increase? Is it sustainable? All right. So I went back and looked because we have historical information on this. And yeah, I mean, Kylie was right. The cheapest club level Jumbo House room would have been right at $520 a night with tax in 2019 because of a 20% discount that Disney was running at deluxe hotels for the general public and for AP holders. And that was through April 27th, 2019. Adjusted for inflation, that 2019 rate would be about $630 in today's money. I do note this, that some of this depends on the time you're going, Kylie. The cheapest rack rate for Animal Kingdom Lodge Jumbo Club level right now this year in 2024 is $873 with tax. Let's assume you can get that for 20 or 25% off as well, which would make it $654. So after accounting for inflation, that's just under 4% higher than in 2019. So the thing I would say here, Kylie, is look at like for like dates and see how much the difference is with the discounts. And the reason why I mentioned this, Jim, is, you know, we were talking earlier before the show that I'm looking at ticket and hotel costs for an interview I'm doing later today with the Wall Street Journal. So Kylie, thank you for that question because it fits right in. Yeah, but it was really interesting to see how not only hotel prices and ticket prices have changed, but because we track how many days people are staying, it's interesting to see how the length of trip has changed and how park hopping is coming back. Super interesting. We'll talk more about this on another show. Also, last week, Craig wrote in with a question about the best shore excursion for a Disney cruise to Alaska, and we recommended the Alaskan Sled Dog Experience based on input from my friend Aaron, who co-authors the DCL book with me. A number of listeners wrote in to say that the Sled Dog Experience was also their favorite shore excursion, and our Australian mate John Mooland even sent in photos of his spectacular experience, him and his wife playing with the dogs. Jim, I put the photos in the show notes, and it is adorable.
They are.
This looks like the greatest time. Mm-hmm. So the first photo, they're cuddling like puppies, mm-hmm. and the puppies are trying to kiss them, which is great. And then they get to play with the actual sled dogs themselves. Then there's a picture of them on the sled, two pictures on the sled. But Jim, look at that last photo of the helicopter ride over the fjord to get to the dogs. That is spectacular. That's a poster.
Absolutely. But on the other hand, I look at that image and I think, well, one does not just simply take a dog sled into Mordor.
Exactly.
Wow.
There's a Lord of the Rings joke in there somewhere.
Yeah. No, that is some formidable looking character there. Holy cow.
Yeah. It's rough looking. Yeah. But beautiful too. Also, you can see how much the glacier has receded.
Yeah.
So my point here is if you want to go see Alaskan glaciers, do the dog sled experience and do it soon. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Jim continues the story of the last huge Magic Kingdom transformation when Disney proposed Pixie Hollow and we ended up with Storybook Circus. We'll be right back.
Remember how back around the first of the year, you promised yourself that you'd start eating better, that you'd cut out all that junk food and start eating meals at home? Which was a great goal to have, by the way, but what they don't tell you when you start to try to have a more balanced diet is how much time you'll then be spending in the kitchen. Not eating, mind you, but doing all the prep you need to do out ahead of cooking healthier meals and all that time chopping vegetables. Well, Factor has a solution. Factor sends chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals right to your door, and all you have to do is heat them up. Factor also has dozens of meal options for you to choose from, not to mention more than 60 add-on items to help shake things up. Nancy just ordered a couple of Factor's calorie counting options, and I have to admit that I'm really looking forward to sampling those. And not just because it means that I'll be spending less time in the kitchen that night plowing through all that prep work. Look, whether you're vegan, vegetarian, counting calories, or keto, Factor has meals that you'll love without those piles of dirty dishes afterwards. Factor works with you and for you, which means you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. So if Factor sounds like something you'd like to try, well, head on over to factormeals.com/dish50 and use code DISH50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. Again, that's code DISH50 at factormeals.com/dish50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. We thank them for sponsoring today's show. It's spring cleaning time, folks. I know. People typically think of this time of year as when you break out the rake and begin dealing with all those twigs and tree branches that got knocked down in your yard over winter. But these days, it's also important, well, not to just deal with the clutter that accumulates in the real world, but also get in there and spruce up your virtual spaces. Take, for example, all the subscriptions or free trials that you started and then forgot about. Now, isn't it time that you waded into that pile and did some pruning too? And if that's something you've been meaning to do for a while now, well, Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money is the personal finance app that finds and then cancels your unwanted subscriptions. Rocket Money also monitors your spending and helps you lower your bills so that you can then start growing your savings. And what I especially love about Rocket Money is, well, it's got this dashboard that then shows me how this month's spending compares to last month's spending, which then gives me a better understanding of my spending habits. Plus, Rocket Money provides me with the resources I need to build a custom budget, which then helps me keep my spending on track. It also allows me to keep tabs on all of my subscriptions all in one place, which is how I learned recently that I'd somehow accidentally signed up for the digital version of the New York Times twice. Not sure how I did that, but Rocket Money allowed me to cancel that redundant subscription with a single click. And did I mention that Rocket Money has over 5 million users, more to the point that this personal finance app has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when they use all of this app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/DisneyDish. That's rocketmoney.com/DisneyDish. One more time, for those of you who've already been helping yourself to handfuls of Easter candy, even though that holiday is not till March 31st, rocketmoney.com/DisneyDish. We thank them for sponsoring today's show.
And we're back. All right. Jim, we talked about this 2 weeks ago, right? Remind me where we left off.
Just a quick recap here. The Walt Disney Company launches its Disney Princess franchise back in 2000. And what started out as a mere $300 million a year business line, Len, quickly became a $3 billion a year business line. And Disney's only problem with the great gout of cash that came its way is that little girls would age out of supporting this at roughly the age of seven. So Disney was looking out for a way to continue to milk this cash cow. So they explored all sorts of ideas, and including creating another franchise that little girls could effectively embrace after they aged out of Disney Princesses, which bringing us back to the Disney Destiny and the idea that, you know, this is going to be a cruise line that celebrates heroes and villains. Worth noting that Disney Consumer Products explored the idea of a Disney Princess adjacent line, Disney Heroes. Now, this launched in 2004, and the idea was it was a series of action figures that paired heroes and villains. I mean, for example, you could buy Peter Pan and Captain Hook, or Robin Hood and the Sheriff in Nottingham. And kind of an interesting bend on this, you could buy Prince Philip from Sleeping Beauty, but you didn't get Maleficent as Maleficent. You got Maleficent as a dragon. But as we move on here, classic Disney stories, Disney Heroes sold okay. And just to be blunt here, any other company would have kept this product line alive. But Disney expected Disney Princess money from this new business initiative. When that didn't happen in year one, the company rapidly walked away from the Disney Heroes idea. Though, by the way, if you want these action figures today, prepared to pay buku bucks on eBay. There's a huge post collector's market.
Jim, I love your summary of this and how Disney tied it into aging out, because if these girls were seven around, if they launched the franchise in 2000 and 7 year old girls started to like this, you know, in the 2000s range, it kind of explains how we ended up with the slightly more mature Disney Descendants in 2015 as those kids kept aging.
You are not wrong. That's Disney doing what Disney does best. It's like, you know, like, is there another way we can mine this? But what was interesting is after Disney Heroes didn't do the numbers that the company expected, company did an after actions report. It's like, okay, what went wrong? And it's like, you know, look, they should have known these characters. They have the classic Disney animated films at home as VHSs. And more to the point, that's why we didn't throw money at making people aware of these characters. But what also came back was that for that very same reason, that, well, look, I know Peter Pan. I've watched the VHS. I know what Peter Pan and Captain Hook do. I don't know what new I can do with these characters. And so the takeaway from Consumer Products was like, okay, if we do this again, we need to do a far better job of supporting the overall launch of this business line and have as many arms as the company as possible get behind this initiative. So we're talking publishing, home entertainment, the parks. And also, we need to give our customers new characters to embrace. So this is why when 1 year later, when the company launches Disney Fairies in 2005, the initial wave comes out of publishing. There was the Gail Carson Levine book, Fairy Dust and the Quest for the Egg, that hit store shelves in 2005. Phase two came just, I want to say, 9 months later, when Dick Cook is standing on stage in the Javits Center in New York in June of 2006, announcing that a line of Tinkerbell movies, which will feature the Disney Fairies characters, will launch with the film Tinkerbell and the Ring of Belief. And to further put this on the map, Cook introduces Brittany Murphy, who is going to be the official voice of Tinkerbell going forward. And you might remember her from the film Clueless, but...
Clueless, yeah.
Okay. This is a very big deal, because hiring somebody to be the voice of Tinkerbell, because since Disney did its version of Tinkerbell in February of 1953, character hasn't talked. One problem led. 6 months earlier, in January of 2006, Disney had acquired Pixar Animation Studio for $7.4 billion. And as part of this acquisition, John Lasseter, who was the chief creative officer for Pixar, assumes that very same role at Walt Disney Animation Studios and at Disney Toon Studios, which is the arm at Disney that does home premieres. And supposedly, John Lasseter just hated Tinkerbell and the Ring of Belief.
Wait, so you're saying a creative individual like John Lasseter doesn't like an idea that was basically spawned by spreadsheets? What? Yeah. What?
You got it one. John was a huge fan of the 1953 film and just looked at this as a naked cash grab. And it's like, look, we got to do better by this character. She's beloved. But here's the thing. Disney Consumer Products, this film was basically made like those animated series for G.I. Joe and... You know the ones I'm talking about from the
80s. It has a certain animation aesthetic that is... The fact that it is made so cheaply and looks so cheaply made is the aesthetic. Like, that's the selling point of a lot of that animation.
And by the way, the key phrase there is selling point, as in they would introduce characters or vehicles as part of these animated series deliberately to support stuff that was coming to market.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So what Lasseter was doing by insisting, no, we have to change the story, or no, we need different characters, it's like... The people at Consumer Products is like, we've already designed the toy that keys off of that moment in the movie and that character. And now I have to get on the phone to Singapore and tell them, hey, don't make that doll.
Yeah. So Consumer Products is telling John Lasseter, John, we have two choices here. One, I could call up every toy manufacturer in China that is contracted to build this stuff and have them stop whatever they're doing and restart the entire process. Or I can force you to agree with me. let me go over those two choices again one more time.
Well, now, and what's so fascinating is at this point, Lasseter is so powerful, he can actually push back. And
wow.
So this is what happens. Tinkerbell, the Ring of Belief, which was supposed to come out in the fall of 2007, gets pushed back all the way to October of 2008. And by then... It's an entirely different film. It's just called Tinkerbell. But what's interesting is that when this finally arrives on store shelves, in that same window of time, we see our very first Pixie Hollow open at Disneyland Park. Now, you probably remember this, Len. It would have been off of the hub in the Alpine Garden. In fact, this is when we brought David Bossert on the show to talk about House of the Future. This is the garden that was next to the House of the Future. And for a time, from 96 to 2008, this was also where a Little Mermaid-themed meet and greet was located.
Yeah, you and I stood at this very spot, and you told me this story when we were in Disneyland.
Same time, down in Florida, over in the Toontown Hall of Fame, and Mickey's Toontown Fair, this is where their dedicated meet and greet area is located. A Disney Fairies meet and greet gets set up here. Kids can... go hang with Tinkerbell and her friends Iridesa, Silver Mist, and Fawn. And so first Tinkerbell film comes out, as we mentioned, October of 2008. 1 year later, we get second film in the series, Lost Treasure, that arrives 2009. And then there's a third home premiere that arrives in October of 2010. We've got books, we've got toys associated with this business line. Selling well enough at this point that WDI is inspired. They're in the middle of the new Fantasyland project for Florida. They're looking to expand the most popular theme park in Florida, basically doubling its size. or more than doubling its size, taking it from 11 acres to 26 acres. But the original plan was, this leans very heavily into the Disney Princess and the Disney Fairies franchise. But we've talked previously
this about version of this version of New Fantasyland.
Yeah, that you know, okay, it's the one with the super deluxe next generation meet and greets. We know from today, for example, when you go to Maurice's cottage and get magically transported to the Beast Castle, and you know, and get to reenact the story of Beauty and the Beast with Belle herself. But there was also supposed to be two other super deluxe next gen meet and greets. You were supposed to go to the Tremaine Chateau and be there as Cinderella gets her ball gown. And then, you know, you get to watch her climb into the pumpkin coach and leave for the ball. Likewise, you were supposed to be able to go to the woodcutter's cottage and surprise Briar Rose, who is coming back. You know, it's the night of her 16th birthday, and you get to write cards and wish her well before she leaves to go. And Pixie Hollow was supposed to be just as elaborate. They were going to build a full-size pixie dust tree. There was going to be a flat spinner ride, something similar to a Mad Tea Party, that was made out of found objects from the human world that Tinkerbell had now turned into ride vehicles. And anyway, Jay Rasulo, the then head of Disney Parks, reveals the company's plans to redo Florida's Fantasyland in September 2009. By the way, Glenn, not generally known, but Disney actually had two Pixie Hollows in the works, one for Florida and one for Shanghai, that was supposed to be part of that project's castle park. But 2 months after Rasulo announces his plan, November of 2009, Bob Iger, who this is going to be kind of ironic for you, Len, this is the guy who's wondering about his successor and who he should pick for the job.
how did that get resolved, Jim? We should talk about that on a show.
Maybe we will. If it ever does get resolved. Anyway, at this point, he decides that he wants Jay Rasulo and Tom Staggs, who at that time is the company's CFO, to switch jobs. That he feels like, you know, whoever is going to be in charge of Disney has to understand money, but also has to understand the parks. And we've talked at length on previous Disney Dish about how Tom Staggs, who's a father of boys, wasn't a fan of the original plan for the Fantasyland redo because it leaned so heavily into Princesses and Fairies. In fact, Tom is the guy who insisted that, look, drop the Sleeping Beauty, drop the Cinderella thing, which, by the way, Len, those were both going to be housed in the same show building, one massive show building. The Tremaine Chateau was going to face Cinderella Castle to the south, and I want to say the Woodcutter's Cottage was going to be facing to the northeast. But anyway, Staggs, because he's CFO, he's like, look, I know that sales for the third Tinkerbell movie weren't as strong as the previous two. In fact, this is why the fourth film in the series, The Secret of the Wings, it gets pushed off to October of 2012, because they're like, okay, what are we doing wrong here?
Yeah, let's hedge our bets a little bit here, yeah.
Okay, so January 2011, Staggs announces revised plans for New Fantasyland, and this is where Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty meet and greets fall off the table to get replaced by Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, and Pixie Hollow gets cut for Storybook Circus. Now, the fairies are still popular at this point. So when they do shut down Toontown Fair to begin work on Storybook Circus, the fairies take off for Adventureland. And for a time, they're doing their meet and greets on the old Adventureland veranda.
I remember this, yeah.
In some place, I think it was called Tinkerbell's Nook. And
right.
But anyway, we get three more Disney fairy films. Like I said, we get Secret of the Wings in October 2012. We get Pirate Fairy in April of 2014. And then finally, in March of 2015, we get Tinkerbell and the Legend of the Never Beast. And there just doesn't seem to be any pixie dust left in the tank, Glenn. So right. Disney announces they're going to go another way. The very same year that Never Beast is released, they announce that they're going to pursue a live-action Tinkerbell film that Reese Witherspoon is going to star in. And this moves very far along Disney's development and production line. In the end, Witherspoon just couldn't deliver a script that she was happy with, so it didn't go forward. There were two further animated Disney Fairies films that were planned. There was the Tinker Academy and Tink meets Peter. They were well along the way in development, but were eventually pushed on hold and finally never put into production. And as for Disney Toon Studios, it actually closes in June of 2018. And John Lasseter, who had been on a leave of absence since November of 2017 for what has been called inappropriate behavior, actually leaves the company in the very same month, June of 2018. And now, mind you, Disney has stayed in the Peter Pan Tinkerbell business. April of last year, we got Peter Pan and Wendy, a movie by David Lowery, where Yara Shadari, she's from Blackish and Grownish, she played Tinkerbell in that movie. And of course, as we mentioned when we started the series, that we have our fairy Tinkerbell's Busy Buggies opening at Fantasy Springs at Tokyo Disney Sea's June 6th of this year. But one final weird bend on the story length. And again, we were talking about going on eBay and hunting for Disney Heroes action figures. If you go now and try to track down the initial set of Disney Princess toys that was created the very first year that, you know, this franchise was launched, at that time, Tinkerbell was a Disney princess.
Really?
Yep. That she's in there with Snow White, Cinderella, and Sleeping Beauty, and the like. And when people asked, why is she in there? They're, oh, well, no, she's Tinkerbell. She's Queen of the Fairies.
Is Tinkerbell canonically the Queen of the Fairies?
Here's what confuses me, Len. The franchise is called Disney Fairies. Okay. The right. place that they live is called Pixie Hollow. Okay. What's the difference between a pixie and a fairy? Do you know? I don't know.
I am not that familiar with the Fae. I don't know.
Well, there we go. I got to just... If somebody does understand, please let us know. Because, and more to the point, it's like, is there anything anywhere that once said that Tinkerbell was Queen of the Fairies?
I think our listeners are up for this challenge, Jim, this research extravaganza that we've just thrust upon them.
There we go.
Fantastic job. Yeah, that's bizarre how that Tink is a princess. Interesting.
Again, we got to remember, this is Consumer Products launching the Disney Princesses line, and it's effective. Well, all right, how much can we sell $5 for? How much can we sell $6 for? Okay, Tink's now a Disney princess. You know, we can get an extra $2.
Yeah, I liken these early efforts to holding handfuls of spaghetti and asking where the wall is, right? Like that's...
There we go.
And speaking of launching, Jim, this happened while we were recording, but Disney's just announced a new drone show for Disney Springs. It's called Disney Dreams That Soar. Now, you and I have talked about this for like years.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. So it starts May 24th, runs through September 2nd, 2024. 500 drones, I guess. And they had run a test earlier in the year to make sure that it worked. And this goes back to like they had originally done a drone show in 2016, which you and I saw together and loved. Yeah. So super excited about this. All right. We'll talk more about this next week.
Absolutely. Wow. Okay. Good. Love that we caught that just as we're headed out the door.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for the show today. You can help support our show by subscribing over at patreon.com/Jim Hill Media, where we're posting exclusive shows every week. Check it out at patreon.com/Jim Hill Media. On next week's show, Jim has found new archival material about Disney's old Treasure Island/Discovery Island location, including what might have been attractions. You can find more of Jim at jimhillmedia.com and more of me, Len, at touringplans.com. We're produced spectacularly by Eric Hersey, who'll be staffing the Reading is Fundamental booth for the Burlington Public Library before the Red Hot Chili Pipers, yes, pipers as in bagpipes, check the spelling, take the stage on Friday, April 5th, 2024 at the Burlington Memorial Auditorium. That's on North Front Street in beautiful downtown Burlington, Iowa. While Eric's doing that, please go on to iTunes and rate our show and tell us what you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We'll see you on the next show.